This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A suicide driver set off a truck bomb at the gates of the U.S.-led coalition headquarters Sunday, killing about 20 people and wounding 63 in the deadliest attack here since Saddam Hussein's capture last month. The bombing came on the eve of a meeting between U.S. Administrator L. Paul Bremer and U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan to discuss Iraqi's future, including whether Iraq is safe enough for the world body to return. The attack was the first vehicle bombing inside the U.S.-controlled Green Zone along the west bank of the Tigris River, which insurgents have targeted in the past with mortar and rocket fire. The force of the blast from a bomb containing 1,000 pounds of explosive rattled windows more than a mile away. An Idaho lab has released conclusive results showing 36 mortar shells recently unearthed in southern Iraq contained no chemical warfare agent, the Danish Army said Sunday. Initial examinations by Danish and British troops had indicated a blister agent was in the shells, which apparently date to the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s. But tests by the U.S. Department of Energy's National Engineering and Environmental Laboratory in Idaho came back negative, the Danish Army Operational Command said in a statement. The results confirmed earlier findings by a U.S.-led Iraq survey group that was dispatched to the site in southern Iraq after the shells were found. Northwest Airlines said Sunday that an executive and a company spokesman were not aware of the company's role in a secret government study when they denied that the airline gave away passenger information. Northwest acknowledged Saturday that it gave information to the federal government for an air security project after the September 11th terrorist attacks. The airline said it participated in the NASA program to help the government search for technology to improve aviation security. Northwest was the second airline to be identified as secretly passing travelers' records to the government. In September, JetBlue Airways said it turned over passenger records to a defense contractor. The company later apologized to its customers. More news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 save the music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 save the music because music education equals brain power.
People in straight-laced Singapore were urged Monday to act like monkeys, the Chinese zodiac sign for the coming lunar year, for the sake of their country. Singaporeans could foster an economic recovery this year by behaving more like monkeys, Deputy Prime Minister Tony Tan said in a Lunar New Year message. Chinese communities around the world will herald the start of the year of the monkey on Thursday. Chinese believe the monkey is clever, flexible, innovative, and confident, but can also be selfish, jealous, and vain. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Murder is not anything I could ever commit, but there are a few individuals whose obituaries I could read without feeling terribly sad. I must admit, however, that one thing does induce murderous thoughts in my otherwise gentle head. Car alarms. Like a demon screeching from the deepest reaches of hell, these satanic devices whoop, beep, razz, whine, and irritate in the most intrusive way, shattering the civility of entire neighborhoods and jangling even the calmest of souls. They seem programmed specifically to go off in the wee hours of morning, rudely awakening families for blocks around in an act of urban harassment. Car alarms are sold in the name of theft protection, but that's a joke. An independent survey of 73 million insurance claims for robbery of vehicles reveals that cars with alarms, quote, show no overall reduction in theft losses. Why? Two reasons. First, nearly all of the whooping is due to false alarms caused by a passing motorcycle, a thump by a cat, or simply because the damn thing decides on its own to interrupt our peace and tranquility. They go off so often that most of us always assume it's a false alarm. An insurance company found that fewer than 1% of people would call the cops because of a blaring car alarm. Second, it's rare to hear an alarm when the car is actually being stolen because real thieves can easily deactivate the devices in only seconds. As one expert puts it, car alarms work about as well as fuzzy dice at deterring theft. Far from stopping crime, they often cause it, as irate neighbors go out in their jammies to puncture tires, sledgehammer hoods, and even shoot the offending vehicles. Plus, all of this is unnecessary, since there are engine immobilizers that can prevent nearly all auto thievery. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help kill screeching car alarms, call Transportation Alternatives, 212-629-8080.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
Doug Stepman's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations, on stream 143, on the Sirius satellite radio system, and all over the planet on a whole variety of internet radio stations, including IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com, RadioPower.org, that logs over 10,000 listeners a day in over 100 countries to this program, and others. Anyhow, welcome back. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the official observance day, and I'm broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., from the Hart Senate Office Building, marvelous studio here, and we have with us Mike Leonard of the UFCW. We're going to get to that in just a second, and to Mike. But first, because it's Martin Luther King Day, I just wanted to note this. Martin Luther King was one of my heroes. He was an extraordinary man, and for those who are not old enough to remember when he was actually out there in the world, the extraordinary dynamic between the violence with which those people who went into the South to try to desegregate communities were met. And see, we watched it on TV. I mean, I remember watching this stuff, and you know, I was a young teenager at the time, but you know, we just. And they come out with the fire hoses, and they come out with the dogs, and they come out with the guns in many cases, and there's the murders and the drive-by shootings, and his response to it all, always was stand quietly, stand with integrity, stand for peace, never fight back, sit down if necessary, just be there. And there is such, it's not just a quiet dignity, there's such power in that. It's extraordinary. And like Gandhi did with India, Martin Luther King transformed America. We owe him a great debt of gratitude. We have just a little clip that Char Jones, who often engineers this program, put together, and I'm going to play one in each hour of the program today. But it, just a nice little tribute to Martin Luther King Jr. John, you want to cue that and play it?
Celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., listen as we reflect on his words.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream.
Yes.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Thank you, Dr. King, for being the person you were and for what you stood for to make us the people we are today. Your words live on.
Amen. Yeah. And so, anyway, this is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Mike Leonard has been a trade union activist since he was 16 years old when he became a member of Amalgamated Meat Cutters and Butcher Workmen of North America Local 227 while working at a Kroger in Louisville, Kentucky. A groundbreaker, he's fusing innovative, technology-driven organizing strategies with traditional mass movement union activism to bring union representation to unorganized workers, especially Walmart. The union that he's the executive vice president of, the United Food and Commercial Workers, or UFCW, is nearly 40% of their members are under 30 years old. It's the youngest, most vibrant, and best-educated worker organization in North America. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Tom. This is a great day for us to commemorate and recall, you know, what I believe was American martyr, one of the greatest figures of my life.
Now, you said that there's a connection between Martin Luther King and his life and his assassination and your involvement in the union or the union's involvement in this.
Right. A few years ago, several of us at my organization got together and we did a bus tour. We followed the path of the Freedom Riders all through the South with 30 young people who had just graduated from college. And we tied it into a campaign, a union organizing campaign in the healthcare industry. But along the way, and we visited places which really should be enshrined in this country, which aren't, and which are really painful and in some ways embarrassing part of our history. Mm-hmm. We went to where Emmett Till was lynched. We went to Fannie Lou Hamer's grave. All these places where our civil rights movement was challenged and where people came together in the right way and as a moral authority. And in doing that, people would get on the bus and tell their stories. But it began at the Lorraine Hotel, where Dr. King was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. And the man who had been our president of our what was a retail clerk local in that day was there. And what I didn't know, of course, I knew that he was there to support a strike for sanitation workers.
Dr. King was there.
Dr. King was. Yeah. But what I didn't know was that while this was going on, and I believe it eventually became an AFSCME, Local American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, but while this union was farming in a South that was extremely inhospitable to unions, but also to people of color rising up, was that the only place where they were able to hold their meetings was our small union hall. And the man who offered it, his name was Leon Shepherd. His family was threatened. He was threatened. His home was, they threatened to bomb his home. But he stood up, you know. And when I think of Dr. King and that magnificence and that bravery, that kind of bravery, you know, I wish that I could see it more. I wish that it was happening more for this generation the way it was for ours, because he inspired so many of us to do things that are important and that have to be taken up. So he's a great American.
It seems when you look back on the era of 1776, or you look back on the Great Depression that brought out FDR, or you look back at the time of the Gilded Age that brought out the populist movement, William Jennings Bryan and Teddy Roosevelt ultimately. And you look at the different eras through American history, and it seems like the greater the time of crisis, the more you have these heroic figures that emerge. And I think it's just, you know, average people who decided to do above average or beyond, you know, who step beyond because of the crisis of the day. And it certainly seems to me today that we are at one of those points again. I'm not sure who the next Martin Luther King or who the next, you know, John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy is who is emerging. But I have a feeling that within the next year or two, and perhaps even out of this presidential campaign, we'll see, that somebody is going to be stepping forward and saying enough. You know,
exactly.
It's time to transform this nation, because a nation without heroes, particularly in time of crisis, is a nation that's dying.
Because I was a young man and these things were happening, my filter was that of a young man. And while the civil rights movement was growing across this country, there was a war.
Yeah.
And I volunteered and I served two tours and you know, was involved in combat in the Mekong Delta. And, you know, I looked at that whole time so differently.
Yeah.
Because of my perspective. And then came home and found in many ways I've been taken advantage of. In many ways I was naive and really powerless. And my sense is that people are finding that out now. And that as we go through some of the crisis we're having today, we talk so often about the land of the free and the home of the brave. I think that free and bravery is going to show its head in more domestic ways, that people are again going to step up and act up.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about, just give our listeners a quick overview of the UFCW.
Well, UFCW is about 1.4 million working men and women. The largest part of our membership in the United States and Canada would be in retail. But we're also involved in the meatpacking, the food processing and manufacturing industries. We represent workers in healthcare. We represent some public employees. We are workers in America's middle class. In what at one time was considered in many ways marginal jobs, but have become some of the best jobs because of what has happened in our country to manufacturing. And so our fight now, 1,400,000 of us, is to keep those as good middle class jobs and keep the things that come with a good job, and then also extend them to other people who want to join the union.
Yeah. I have my own take on this, which is that government, which in the United States is supposed to be we the people, you know, it is us. I mean, as opposed to, for example, the Soviet Union. You know, Ayn Rand grew up in the Soviet Union, and she had this notion. Well, that's a whole other conversation. This notion that government is always evil, and I think the Grover Norquist types have adopted that distorted view of what America is. But we have now a situation where the government has established the rules for playing the game of business. And those rules have changed many times over the years. And recently the rules have changed in such a way that they're saying basically American labor is now free, in quotes, as in free trade, free for corporations, free to compete with a 14-year-old kid in Malaysia or in China who may be facing imprisonment if they try to organize or if they protest. I want to get to the whole issue of how you go about unionizing and the issue with Walmart and all of these things, but just at that level, it seems to me that the real work that needs to be done is in completely transforming our trade policies, getting out of WTO and GATT, those, you know, dealing at a macro level, at the big picture level. Is your union involved in that sort of thing?
We have involvement in trade issues and issues around immigration. There's not a segment of business or society that doesn't impact our members as workers, and therefore we have to have within, you know, our union and within the labor movement, people devoted to the political side of our life, the work side, and the global side, and we have to link up with unions outside of America, in other developed nations, in other emerging nations,
Are you doing that?
Oh, absolutely. There are trade federations worldwide. In fact, the one of the largest. Is headed by a man who is also a representative of our union, international vice president for us in our foreign affairs department. There is a worldwide network, and where the labor movement falls down is in many ways people believe that it's America first. And sometimes the connections with other workers and other organizations aren't made strong enough. And so it plays to the, when the employers say, well, we're moving this plant here so that we can compete.
Yeah.
We don't draw out enough of what that really means, that low wages in one country don't benefit those workers.
Yeah, and what the cons always like, you know, the conservatives, the pitch that they make is it's our nation versus another nation. And they totally forget that there's a third entity there, which are multinational corporations. This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with Mike Leonard, Executive Vice President of the UFCW. Stay tuned. We'll be back. By the way, if you'd like to call, 1-800-TALK-YES.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. You'll sleep like a...
Okay, up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Bosses of the world, unite, let us save the day. Malcontents without 5 cents want us to cut our pay. We only
only make 500 times as much as our average worker drones. We work just as hard and we too sometimes need to paint our homes. The pressures are incredible and no one seems to care. We moved our plants to Haiti and now we have to move from there. They're clamoring for more than a dollar a day from Malaysia to Mexico. At that rate, pretty soon there'll be no place for us to go.
And the day may come. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're broadcasting live here from Washington, D.C. We have as our guest Mike Leonard, the Executive Vice President of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Labor Union. Michael Rodriguez was an employee of Sam's Club in Corpus Christi, Texas. And this is a story that was in the January 18th New York Times. 3 o'clock in the morning, one of the guys working with Mr. Rodriguez drove a forklift truck into his ankle, crushing it. Mr. Rodriguez, of course, wanted to leave and go to a hospital because he had, you know, several bones shattered, apparently, in his ankle. But he discovered that the doors were all locked. There was no manager there overnight. There was no key. As usual, to quote the New York Times, the Sam's Club, a Walmart subsidiary, had locked its overnight employees in, as it always did, to keep robbers out and, some managers say, to prevent employee theft. As usual, there was no manager with a key to let Mr. Rodriguez out. My ankle was crushed, Mr. Rodriguez said. I was yelling and running around like a hurt dog that had been hit by a car. Another worker made phone calls to reach a manager, and it took an hour for someone to get there and unlock the door. Turns out, this is standard operating procedure. It's a policy many employees say, according to the New York Times, has created disconcerting situations, such as when a worker in Indiana suffered a heart attack, when hurricanes hit in Florida, and when workers' wives have gone into labor. This just, you know, the whole idea, Mike, that labor is just another commodity, it's just another raw material, and therefore transnational corporations should be able to mine it all around the world the way they might bauxite, is nuts. Tell us about the situation with Walmart and what you guys are doing.
Well, the story you just told, you know, people, labor history is filled with these kind of tragedies in some of the worst. You know, I think a Triangle Shirt fire, but not long ago, Imperial Poultry in Hamlet, North Carolina, where they actually chained to work the doors, the fire exits in the plant. Workers were burned to death, couldn't get out during a fire, and the management said it was so they couldn't steal any chicken.
Yeah.
I mean, the employer names change, scale changes. But it's they always have a justification, and these tragedies shouldn't be allowed to happen. Walmart is one of the corporations that I've been in the retail business since 1964 in one way or another. But Walmart is the most amazing corporation in some ways. It's this absolutely wonderful business model. $245 billion in sales last year. It's the largest corporation in the world. They're in 19 countries on every continent in some fashion except Antarctica, primarily because penguins can't work in sweatshops.
Yeah.
But I mean, this corporation is an empire. It is the largest employer in the United States, the largest employer in about 25 individual states, employ about 1 million people in the United States. But to date, I've almost never found them admit that they've done anything wrong.
Yeah, they're the size of a lot of nations.
Exactly. I mean, if you took their sales and you considered that as a GNP, the mm-hmm. gross national product of a corporation, their GNP would be greater than that of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
That's
incredible.
That's a few dollars.
Saudi Arabia.
It would make them like the 17th largest economy on the planet.
In the world.
So, people, we were talking earlier about how jobs go to other countries.
Yeah.
Well, we are the competition that they go. When they say they move for competition, Walmart is that competition. They employ 12 million, indirectly, 12 million people in China.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with Mike Leonard of the UFCW. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A lot of tiny plants in the ocean appear to be growing more slowly as the oceans get warmer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Plants use carbon dioxide during photosynthesis, but small plants at sea are not using as much carbon dioxide as they did 20 years ago. This change is worth noting because these plants remove huge amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and CO2 is one of the most common of all the greenhouse gases. Watson Gregg is an oceanographer with the U.S. Space Agency NASA. He uses satellite images to study the abundance of small marine plants known as phytoplankton. He says the phytoplankton have less to eat these days, and one reason has to do with water temperature. The temperature of the Earth's atmosphere has risen, and so has the temperature of seawater in the surface of the ocean. The surface water gets lighter as it gets warmer, and that seals off the deeper water that's cold and dense. The cold water carries up nutrients from the depths, and marine plants at the surface need it to survive. Greg says this means less food for phytoplankton as the temperature of the surface goes up.
The more you warm it, the more of a barrier there is, and that prevents nutrients from getting up, and that tends to sort of starve the phytoplankton so they can't grow as fast.
Greg says satellite data indicate that phytoplankton use 6% less carbon dioxide today than they did in the early 1980s. He says the degree of the decline is not necessarily the most important part of the story.
I think the fact that there's a decline at all is probably the bigger thing. I don't know whether I can say that 6% is something particularly noteworthy. You know, it's not small, but the fact that it occurred at all suggests that there's a consistent story here.
Greg says these results indicate that the use of carbon dioxide by marine plants might be declining as a result of changes in the Earth's climate. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tight to the American dream, the dream of a good job, the dream of a job you can raise a family on, you can pay for your medical insurance on, you can set a little aside to retire on, the dream of a job that will provide that will provide and create a middle class for America, as we had during the golden age of the American middle class from 1943 to 1973, before the cons got into office. Largely with Ronald Reagan's administration when he stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. You'll recall Jimmy Carter before that had busted up AT&T
Would something like Walmart in its current predatory situation have been tolerated under the Carter administration? I don't think so. But Reagan gave the green light. We had all these mergers and acquisitions. Now we're seeing the results of big fish eat little fish, and then big fish eat medium fish, and now there's only one big fish left. And we're very close to that day. We're talking with Mike Leonard, Executive Vice President of the United Food and Commercial Workers, the union that is going right up, head-to-head, face-to-face with Walmart all across the United States. Mike, tell us about. First of all, you had some thoughts on Walmart, and you finished those up, and then tell us about what you.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think I described for your listeners what the company's like, and I like your analogy about the big fish. You know, the big fish is now eating up other businesses, and now they're squawking.
Yeah.
And they're begging for relief. Business Week, which is hardly a labor-coddling publication, you know, raises the question, and I think it was the October 6th issue, is Walmart become too powerful?
Yeah.
And you know, all their competitors would say so, and a lot of people who have to supply and do business for them would say so. So, you know, that side of the equation is seeing the threat and what it, you know, what that means for them. And then the other little fish, the workers, are starting to get together.
Yeah.
And that's the way it always begins. And it, you know, it is becoming a movement. People are beginning, you know, Walmart talks about value, but there's nothing valuable about what they're bringing to communities. And people are seeing that, and they're standing up, and they're beginning to support these workers. And I think that Walmart could be a real watershed for the labor movement, because we are creating a movement. We are certainly educating even people who are not normally our allies, small business people, some politicians, and we're bringing a lot of people into a fight that that I think would change union organizing in this country, and will probably change the retail industry dramatically if these workers can put together the numbers and the kind of campaigns and the kind of energy that it takes. And I've seen a lot of it, and I believe they will. It's going to happen.
Now, you said Walmart employs directly and indirectly through its subcontractors 13 million people in China.
13 million people indirectly.
We've got nine million jobs going wanting here in the United
filling
States.
Filling shelves, you know, making those shelves. 12 million people.
Yeah.
If you wonder where your shoe industry went, if you wonder where your textile industry went, you know, if you wonder where all those good light manufacturing jobs went,
yeah,
well, go in Walmart and pick up an item. And look at the name of the country where it was made. It wasn't, you know, wasn't bring it home to the USA. What they're bringing home to the USA is greed and child labor and terrible conditions. That's where these jobs are going.
Yeah. And see, again, we have to keep remembering that it's not that Walmart is like some evil empire. It's that they're playing the game by the rules that we have set with our government policies. And they would be perfectly willing to play the game by a different set of rules if those rules were changed. I mean, they would have no choice, fundamentally. And so the labor movement has to be involved and is involved, I know, in legislative initiatives and things like this, and in trying to get into the Walmart stores and unionizing. What are you guys – you have some upcoming – actions with regard to Walmart?
Well, we have campaigns, you know, in various stages. And I have to tell you, what we have tried to construct is first is the support and foundation for organizing.
Right.
Because most of the workers I talk to, you know that they're getting a raw deal and know that they need to do better. But they also know that they're up against this enormous wealth and this huge corporation that would grind them under their boot if there's not enough of them brought to the fight. So what we've really began to do is build networks and support and do the agitation and the education among these workers so that we can then spring campaigns in lots of locations across many of their formats. Walmart operates under, you know, they have their Division One retail store, their Supercenter, their Sam's Club, their neighborhood markets. We've tried to build a level of support so that when we do move, they won't be able to pick off the brave few.
Yeah.
And that takes a while. I've been 4 years now committed to this campaign, and I'm amazed the level that it's at. But there are 3,500 stores. When we get it to a bigger number of those stores, then it will become more public. We'll begin to involve the NLRB representation process, and the fight will be a lot more visible.
Now, doesn't Walmart have an active process or practice of, you know, showing employees anti-union videos and teach, you know, doing anti-union essentially political education internally?
Well, I prefer to. I have other names for it. It's blatant union busting, and it's for the most part, much of their activity is actually illegal, and we quite frequently have proved that. They have a team. Probably they call it the people department. They deal in great euphemisms at Walmart, and every store has something called the Union Probability Index, the UPI. Mm-hmm. And so as any undercurrent or any activity begins, they unleash this flying team that comes in and literally pounds the people until the people give them the answers they want, and until they think that they've nipped the union campaign in the bud. So, you know, and most of that will involve activity that the National Labor Relations Act prohibits. But, you know, it's a law, and it always gets broken. And it won't get broken when enough people don't count on it. You know, you can't expect that. It's a shame, but the law doesn't protect people. What will protect people is when there's more of them than there is of this cadre that Walmart brings into the store, you know, to do a job on its own people.
So you're helping to bring about this more of that.
We're educating them. We're teaching them their rights. We're teaching them how within the structure of the company to take stands
and
win.
How are you doing this?
We've taught people a lot about what other laws guarantee them. You know, there's been so many cases of people who have been at Walmart been required to work off the clock,
right,
to work unpaid time. Well, a lot of those people didn't know that was wrong. They know it's wrong now. And so lots of them, through other actions and through other groups, have taken Walmart to task with court or Department of Labor. Lots of people didn't know about what they could do about some of the gender, some of the race discrimination, some of the discrimination in pay and promotion. We help educate them to that. And so those kind of fights are beginning. There are many other laws that, as you teach people how to use them and how to access that help it begins to build the infrastructure for a lot of people standing up. When they learn they have one right, it whets an appetite.
Yeah.
It builds courage.
We can do this.
And it starts to happen.
We can do this. Yes.
So, you know, I use those laws as much. I believe workers can do a good job of protecting themselves when there's a lot of them.
There you go.
And that's how we're going to change what's happening at Walmart.
There you go. Okay, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. We're talking with Mike Leonard, Executive Vice President of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. And we've got Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you. Hi, Mike. I'd like to make a comment and then some questions if I can, please.
Very quickly. We've got other callers here.
Well, first off, we have anything but a level playing field in the media. The media has become nothing but a right-wing monopoly, half-truths. And the point is that if we really had a fair and level playing field in the media, these thugs wouldn't be running the country the way they're running it. We wouldn't be where we are right now with the...
Well, we're doing our share for them, Armin. What you hear the other side of the story right here on this program. Anyway, what's your question for Mike Leonard?
Well, is there any truth to the story that I've read on the Internet that a lot of Walmart's fabulous growth in the 80s and everything was none other than laundered drug money through Mena, Arkansas?
Okay, yeah, interesting question. Thanks, Armin. Appreciate that.
Well, Armin, of all the stories that I have heard, that isn't one of them, and so I can't, you know, really make a comment about it. A lot, you know, their growth, let me tell you, there's been two Walmart companies. Sam Walton was absolutely a retail genius, but he also had a set of values, and he had some core philosophies, and he built a certain culture around them. Some of that growth, you know, is a result of a guy who had a dream and acted on it and built a great corporation. Where the problems have really developed is since he passed. You know, he drove a pickup truck, and he didn't have, you know, all the trappings of a big CEO. And, you know, just last week they had $54.2 million in bonuses for the top executives. Sam wasn't about that. Fair shake for an ordinary worker. Now, you know, they have assigned parking in Bentonville.
The pickup trucks are gone. There you have Lexus. You have Jaguar. There's a whole different culture of greed. And the media, for whatever feelings it does have, is beginning to talk about that.
Yeah.
And it's up to us. You know, they get their stories when we create them. And, you know, they'll come if there's a fight. Great. And so we, you know, we need to step up the fight.
Yeah, amen. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, with Mike Leonard, United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. Storm in Southern Illinois is on the line. Hey, Storm, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I wonder if you noticed that many of the big corporations now have changed the name of their personnel departments to human resources.
Right, like humans are a resource like iron ore.
To be used up. They're disposable. Yeah. I wonder if China Mart has done the same thing. By the way, they're not Walmart to me. They're China Mart. What do they call their personnel department?
Yeah,
I think it's the Army.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, I boycott China Mart, and I tell all my people that don't buy me anything from China Mart because I don't want it.
Yeah.
And they're very careful about that now.
Okay. Well said, Storm. Did you have a question, or do you want to just...
Well, I just wondered what China Mart called their personnel department, if they're human resources to them, like to many of the other corporations now, like an old chunk of coal.
Yeah.
They'll use you up, burn you up, and you're out of here.
There you go. Okay, Storm, thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Kodak in St. Thomas, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Kodak, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Happy New Year to you, Tom.
Oh, well, Happy New Year to you, too.
And to everyone in the chat room, I enjoyed my time during the holidays in the chat room with those erudite group of people. I had to look that word up, as a matter of fact.
Hey, Coach Glenn just types, "Hey, Kodak," in the chat room just now. They're remembering you well.
Great.
Alive.
Well, my question is, how about what can we, the customers at Walmart, do? Because as many of the listeners know, I'm an over-the-road trucker. When I'm home on the weekend, I have basically 72 hours to do everything that I need to do. And with Walmart being everywhere, they have really the best prices, and not making a lot of money. You know, I, too, have to sometimes shop at Walmart. I've augmented this by having the Costco membership. And also, there's a new Target Supercenter. So my second question would be, what is Target and Costco doing in order to avert some of the problems that Walmart is going to be facing regarding just the labor issues and also the movement of jobs offshore?
That's a bunch of stuff, Kodak. Thanks. We've got about 3 minutes in this segment, Mike.
I can get through it quick. The reason that we've put the focus on Walmart is, one, that's where the employees have come to us, not that we haven't heard. And Costco actually has some unionized stores. Walmart is where America shops. You know, there's no denying that. And, you know, a good price and a value or something cheap it's not mutually exclusive of fairness and a living wage. The two things, you know, don't have to cancel each other out. If you have to go in Walmart and if you have to shop there, you can still, this is America. You can tell those workers they have a right to more. You can tell them you support them. You know, you can tell them that, health care should be a right of people who go to work every day and do the right thing.
You mean just have conversations
Speak
with people
up.
As you're walking
agitate.
Through, if you're walking through the Walmart.
Agitate,
say something to the employees.
Agitate, educate, and organize. And you know what you'll see? You'll see the truth because management will ask you to leave the store. They want your money. But they sure don't want the truth in their stores.
That's amazing. So if I walk into a Walmart and I say to the cashier, you guys would be much better off with a union. You know,
You'll see fear that you cannot believe. If you stay very long, you'll probably the security cameras will probably take your picture.
Yeah.
Most likely Bentonville, they have satellite and they have Walmart TV.
Yeah.
If you distribute literature or anything, that will immediately be beamed to them. Yeah. A response will come back from someone in the room in Bentonville, and they'll tell them what to do. And if you're making any headway with people, they'll have you removed from the store.
This is like the Empire in Star Wars.
It's exactly the way it works. They control they control the temperature of every store in the United States from Bentonville. So the idea that they control opinions and and discussions and conversations of their employees and anyone else. It's just not a long throw to make.
Yeah. I want to get into what's going on in California. We've only got about 30 seconds left here before we have to go to a break, and we'll only have 3 minutes after. Quick recap?
Well,
we
have 70,000 people on strike against Kroger, Safeway, and Albertsons there. And it's a fight for the future of health care for working America.
Yeah.
They've been out for 3 months. And we're going to expand that fight. And when we come back, I could tell you more about it.
Okay, great. Tell us how people can support that as well. And what impact any kind of national health care might have on it if it happens. We've got Democratic candidates talking about it, although it's still going to be years away even if somebody gets elected, I'm sure. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Listen as we reflect on his words.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream.
Thank you, Dr. King, for being the person you were and for what you stood for to make us the people we are today. Your words live on.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he. I never died, said he.
And the spirit of Joe Hill lives on in America's labor movement, and we have here one of the representatives of one of the most vital parts of the American labor movement. This is Mike Leonard, Executive Vice President of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Labor Union, UFCW. Mike, what can the average person, even somebody who wouldn't be necessarily eligible for union membership, do to support this kind of thing? Because ultimately, this is whether or not we're going to have a middle class in America anymore.
Exactly. Look, anybody who goes into a Walmart store, if they make the decision to go in, that's their right. But, you know, most Americans also believe in a fair deal. They believe in a fair shake, and they tend to believe in the law. Workers have a right to organize. Go in there and tell those people, you know, I'm on your side in this. I believe in a living wage, whether I'm a union member or not. I believe that people should have health care, you know, if they do the right things and go to work and make a profit for a company. There's nothing wrong with telling them that you support them trying to better themselves.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, has built a middle class in this country, the ability to make a living wage, feed your family, clothe your family, put a roof over your head, and send your children to school.
Now,
tell people you think that's a good idea and they should organize.
Now, if one of our listeners is working at store X, whatever it may be, And they're listening to this conversation, they're driving to work or whatever, and they say, you know, having a union in my place might be a good idea. I don't know where to begin. What do they do?
UFCW.org is one place.
Yeah.
1-800-551-4010. UFCW's toll-free number in Washington, D.C. Building is closed today for the holiday. Call there. Ask for the organizing department.
Why don't you give that number one more time?
1-800-551-4010. Ask for the organizing department.
Okay.
Call any labor union in your yellow pages. Tell them where you work, and if they can't represent you, they'll tell you the appropriate union.
Oh, that's
good. This is a right of Americans. If we have a right to pay taxes, if we have a right to serve in the military, if we have a right to vote, if we have all these other rights, this is a federally protected right. Don't let anybody take it away from you.
Amen. Well said. Mike Leonard, good on you. Keep up the good fight. United Food and Commercial Workers International Labor Union. Mike Leonard, the Executive Vice President. This is Tom Hartman with the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Tick-tick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
narwhal.
Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire.
Zebra.
I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A suicide driver set off a truck bomb at the gates of the U.S.-led coalition headquarters Sunday, killing about 20 people and wounding 63 in the deadliest attack here since Saddam Hussein's capture last month. The bombing came on the eve of a meeting between U.S. Administrator L. Paul Bremer and U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan to discuss Iraq's future, including whether Iraq is safe enough for the world body to return. The attack was the first vehicle bombing inside the U.S.-controlled Green Zone along the west bank of the Tigris River, which insurgents have targeted in the past with mortar and rocket fire. The force of the blast from a bomb containing 1,000 pounds of explosive rattled windows more than a mile away. Northwest Airlines said Sunday that an executive and a company spokesman were not aware of the company's role in a secret government study when they denied that the airline gave away passenger information. Northwest acknowledged Saturday that it gave information to the federal government for an air security project after the September 11th terrorist attacks. The airline said it participated in the NASA program to help the government search for technology to improve aviation security. Northwest was the second airline to be identified as secretly passing travelers' records to the government. In September, JetBlue Airways said it turned over passenger records to a defense contractor. The company later apologized to its customers. If you run into trouble in San Francisco, look to a woman for help. Mayor Gavin Newsom named Assistant Police Chief Heather Fong as his pick for interim police chief Sunday, 2 days after he swore in Joanne Hayes White as the city's first woman fire chief. If the city's police commission confirms the 26-year veteran's appointment this week as expected, San Francisco will have the rare distinction of having women in the lead in its two key public safety departments. Newsom, who wants Fong considered for the permanent job, had vowed to bring new leadership to a department still reeling from a scandal over a 2002 street brawl in which three off-duty police officers were accused. More news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 Save the Music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
Singing strengthens the immune system, according to research by scientists at the University in Frankfurt in Germany. The scientists tested the blood of people who sang in a professional choir in the city before and after a 60-minute rehearsal of Mozart's Requiem. They found that concentrations of immunoglobulin A and hydrocortisone increased significantly during the rehearsal. The researchers concluded singing not only strengthened the immune system, but also notably improved the performer's mood. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Murder is not anything I could ever commit, but there are a few individuals whose obituaries I could read without feeling terribly sad. I must admit, however, that one thing does induce murderous thoughts in my otherwise gentle head. Car alarms. Like a demon screeching from the deepest reaches of hell, these satanic devices whoop, beep, razz, whine, and irritate in the most intrusive way, shattering the civility of entire neighborhoods and jangling even the calmest of souls. They seem programmed specifically to go off in the wee hours of morning, rudely awakening families for blocks around in an act of urban harassment. Car alarms are sold in the name of theft protection, but that's a joke. An independent survey of 73 million insurance claims for robbery of vehicles reveals that cars with alarms, quote, show no overall reduction in theft losses. Why? Two reasons. First, nearly all of the whoop-whooping is due to false alarms caused by a passing motorcycle, a thump by a cat, or simply because the damn thing decides on its own to interrupt our peace and tranquility. They go off so often that most of us always assume it's a false alarm. An insurance company found that fewer than 1% of people would call the cops because of a blaring car alarm. Second, it's rare to hear an alarm when the car is actually being stolen because real thieves can easily deactivate the devices in only seconds. As one expert puts it, car alarms work about as well as fuzzy dice at deterring theft. Far from stopping crime, they often cause it, as irate neighbors go out in their jammies to puncture tires, sledgehammer hoods, and even shoot the offending vehicles. Plus, all of this is unnecessary, since there are engine immobilizers that can prevent nearly all auto thievery. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help kill screeching car alarms, call Transportation Alternatives, 212-629-8080.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, as you know. I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. John, is Phil in Florida still on the line? Okay, let's just start right out. Phil has he had called while we were talking with Mike Leonard, and Mike has now left the building, as they say. But Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, hi. I think the big issue, and it's exemplified by the fact that IBM announced they're going to hire 10,000 people. That was the good news. The bad news is 7,000 of those people won't be living in the United States.
Right.
I think the only way that you aren't going to convince corporate America not to export jobs is to make it financially not in their interest. And the only way you're going to do that is a federal law that says whether you are a Sony or you're a General Motors. Any job that is exported outside of the 50 states, you must pay that employee severance equal to 75% of their highest wages for a period of 2 years.
Yeah, that'll work for 2 years, but then you're back. All that does is postpone the inevitable.
No, because they may do the math and say, you know something? Given the number of jobs that we're planning to export, the cost of severance will wipe out any cost in labor.
I guarantee you, they'll do the math and they'll say, we'll recover these 2 years in 5 years.
Well, then if that's the case, then the person at least has a cushion for 2 years.
You know, that's why we have unemployment benefits.
But unemployment benefits don't last 2 years.
And unemployment benefits also are supposed to be coming out of the workers, out of the employers' contribution. I mean, that could be dramatically increased, and that might, help in the way that you're talking about. But I think, frankly, what we need to say is, if you have the consequences of labor being brought into the United States, that is to say, if a telephone is being answered here in the United States. If a telephone that is originating here in the United States is being answered somewhere, if a technical service question that is being asked here in the United States is being answered somewhere else, that when the consequence of activity in the United States happens outside the United States, that if that labor is not compensated at a commensurate rate for that type of labor in the United States. And, of course, those schedules would have to be determined. Then a tariff is imposed so that they are paying a tax to the government for the difference between the two. In other words, deal with labor the same way we've dealt with commodities in the past.
But you know something? They would find a way to deduct that tax on their taxes.
On their taxes. It doesn't matter. If the bottom line, and this has worked for 200 years in the United States, 220 years this has worked. It's just that we have never applied it to labor before. And the Internet has changed everything so that it can, so that now labor is an exportable commodity or an importable commodity, whereas before we had immigration laws that essentially prevented this. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, if IBM wanted to have a bunch of Indians from India doing their engineering, they had to bring them in on visas. And we had these barriers. We said, no, you can't come in. You got to prove that no American can do that job, that that's a uniquely, there's all these hoops you have to. I had to jump through these as an employer once when we had to hire somebody who spoke three different languages and knew how to run Quark Express on a Macintosh. And so I have some experience with this, and it's a huge hassle. Well, now that's if you wanted to have somebody come from another country to the United States to do the work here. Now we're taking that work and we're sending it off to another country. I would submit that that's the same thing, only because the Internet has made it possible for us to export that job without having that person to have to get a visa, that we should do the equivalent of them having to do a visa. That is, if from the company's point of view, make the costs the same. And when the costs, not penalize the companies, but make the costs the same. And when the costs are the same, the companies will always choose to hire domestic.
But the trouble is, what will happen is, unless you have a sufficient number of government employees to enforce that,
labor
that
will
auditing.
Do it. Labor will do it. You're talking about people losing their jobs. They're just going to go away quietly. They're not.
Well, I don't know. This has become Prozac Nation, I think, to a great extent.
And except for the 30 or 40 million of us who are either unemployed or underemployed.
Right.
And I think that there's a mad as hell, and I'm not taking it anymore, bunch out there that are
simmering,
waiting to explode. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the angry Howard Dean is doing so well out in Iowa and across the nation, because people are saying, yeah, I am angry.
Well, I think one critical thing that the news media is not bringing out is that one difference between Bush and all the Republicans going back to Eisenhower, I guess, is that Dean is not beholden to corporate interests because he's not taking their money, and he won't be taking their money.
Yeah,
so he doesn't have to play their tune.
Yeah, I know, and that's
when
one of the things that
president.
has the establishment Democrats worried as well.
And you know that Gephardt, and you know that Kerry, and you know that Lieberman have all taken corporate money.
Well, they have to in order to survive. It doesn't make them bad
that.
People. It doesn't make them bad candidates.
But the bottom line is, it's not in our interest when they get elected with great slogans and then meet with these guys and do their bidding for them.
Yeah. Well, I'm frankly, ever since Howard Dean on Chris Matthews' show said that one of the first things he'd do as president is break up the media monopolies, I thought, when he said that, I thought, okay, that's it. His days of good coverage on network television are toast. And sure enough, from that day, and that was about 3 weeks ago, until this day, I have not seen one positive
comment. That's right.
Comment. I mean, instead you have, you know, this morning we saw Louise and I in here in Washington in the hotel room, we turned on the CNN show and it was Bill Hemmer and Soledad O'Brien or something. Anyhow, they were interviewing one of the candidates. I forget whether it was Kerry or Gephardt. And they said something like, well, you know, how do you deal with Dean being so angry?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, even when they're asking somebody else, they're dissing Dean. It's not. But, you know, let's also keep in mind that if they succeed in knocking off Howard Dean, then you've got Richard Gephardt, who has a tremendous history with organized labor. You got John Kerry, who is a friend of organized labor. You've got John Edwards, who certainly has a long history of standing up for the little guy. Any one of these three, I think, any one of these guys, and Dennis Kucinich as well, although he seems to have fallen off the edge. And again, I would point back to when he took on Ted Koppel as the moment that he slit his own throat with regard to the media. And that's the danger of media concentration, but that's a whole other rant.
Yeah.
But I think any one of these guys would make a good candidate. The problem that they're all going to face is these... They're going to get the Dean treatment. They're going to get, you know, the media.
Right.
You know, the media will be asking Republicans leading questions. They'll be asking Democrats leading questions.
One thing,
if you control the question, it doesn't matter what the answer is.
I know.
Well, if I say, Phil, have you stopped beating your wife yet?
Yeah.
You know, how can you answer?
Right.
You say yes. You say no. I mean, you know. So.
But one thing they can't control, the media can't control, is you can see it happening now that in Iraq they are demanding direct elections. And the religious folks are wanting to be involved.
Well, they're demanding direct elections because they represent, you know, the Shiites are 60%, and the Sunnis are another 30,
right.
40%. I mean, you know, 80 to 90% of Iraq defines themselves as being religious. The secular Muslims is a very small minority, and that was the group that was basically running the show up until now.
Right, but the point is that. Unless he wants a full-blown civil war, Bush is not going to be able to change the minds of the people that say, we want direct elections, and we want the right in your democracy to vote for the candidate that we want. We don't want to do it in some type of esoteric method.
But they're using, and Phil, thanks for the call. I've got to move along. They're doing that in exactly the same way that they are here, and that's they're taking control of the media. They're shutting down opposition media in Iraq. In fact, they already have. They have successfully shut down opposition media. They're absolutely nailing down, tightening down, and putting the screws on. And now we have the Pentagon going to start its own television network, its own broadcast network, to send feeds to the United States. And of course, they're generating local programming on their own there. So it doesn't seem to be working as well as we would like, but time will tell. That Halliburton influence again. This is just incredible. The Asheville, North Carolina Citizen. This is a newspaper that covers the area where Halliburton used to own a toxic waste site. Yes, Halliburton has those too. And in a December 5th, 2002 editorial, they pointed out that the administration's elimination of the Superfund tax is a major gift to polluters like Halliburton and its other financial backers. I mean, that's when you see the State of the Union address tonight, tomorrow night, know that this is, you know, the state of Halliburton is real good. I'm going to get to the State of the Union in a minute. Let me finish up here with a toxic. Knight Ritter reports that the chemical, oil, and gas industries that pushed for the tax elimination have... Now, maybe you don't understand. Let me explain this. The Superfund sites are the most deadly, most polluted, most toxic sites in America. One-fourth of Americans live within 4 miles of a Superfund. They have been linked to cancer, birth defects, learning disabilities, and death. In Libby, Montana example, 200 workers have already died from toxic exposure. And the Lee newspaper there reports, quote, federal efforts to clean up the sites are being delayed by lack of money, end quote. Now, when the Superfund bill was put into law, it was set up so that so that the corporations had to pay into a if you could nail the individual corporation, like this is Halliburton's site, Halliburton has to pay to clean it up. If you couldn't identify who put it there, or if it was one of those sites where a dozen different companies dumped into it, then all the companies paid a tax to create the Superfund fund, that's why it's called the Superfund, and they paid for it out of that. Well, under the Bush administration, you and I are paying that bill. And as a result, not only is it coming out of our tax dollars and the corporations are getting out of get out of jail free card, but also so far this year, only three cleanups have been finished. And according to three EPA Inspector General reports, seven ready to clean Superfund sites last year received no money to start removing waste. The number of Superfund cleanups in fiscal 2001 and 2002 plummeted 41% compared with the annual average over the previous 8 years. And in the midst of this, we discover that the chemical, oil, and gas industries, the push for the tax elimination, have donated more than $158 million to political candidates, principally Republicans, since 1999. Welcome to the wonderful world of Bush's America. Whew, it's amazing. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 19 and a half minutes after the hour, we got Kevin in Tampa and Jim in Nashville. Hang on, we'll pick up your calls right after this break. Stay tuned.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman revealing the con in conservative here on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back to our program. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to be on the show. 1-800-825-5937. And Kevin in Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Okay. Got to turn up your volume there, Kevin.
Are you there?
I am, and you are live
and
on the air.
I'm sorry. I guess I had my fingers over the mouthpiece.
Uh-huh. What's up?
Sorry about that. I called about the guest from the labor union you had on.
Yeah.
I wish he was there. He would have been interested in this story because I did, not in Walmart, but I did in Albertsons, what he was talking about recently. On Christmas Eve, I was in an Albertsons here in Tampa, and they were advertising that they were open on Christmas Day. And I said something to the cashier about it. I said, who's going to work on Christmas Day? And she said, the managers and some of the cashiers who live near. I said, oh, I guess they're getting double or triple time. She says, oh, no, just regular overtime.
Yeah.
And I said, what, on Christmas? You guys need a union. And she said to me right away, she says, oh, no, I don't want to lose my job like those people in California.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one.
It was a scare thing, and you could see it in her eyes and her voice, the way he was saying.
Yeah, that's why I think so many of the provisions of Taft-Hartley in 1948, there are two milestones that started this whole evisceration, that disemboweling of the American middle class. And the first was Taft-Hartley, which only passed Congress over the veto of Harry Truman. I mean, they passed it, he vetoed it, and they overrode his veto. And he called it the Slave Labor Act. And Taft-Hartley gave states the ability to basically opt out of the labor laws. And so then you had the southern states, which had traditionally made, their traditional economic base had been slave labor, were again exempted from unionization requirements, the ones that existed that FDR had put in place in the 30s, and were able to do this right-to-work thing, which you could say, generated a lot of, well, what the right wing says is it generated a lot of economic growth in the South and made the South boom. The reality is, no, that's not what made the South boom. If you look at the boom in the South, it follows the availability of inexpensive air conditioning, not the Taft-Hartley Act. But nonetheless, that mythology endures among right-wingers and non-right-wing talk shows. And so that was the first crack in the wall. And then the other was NAFTA and GATT. And you combine these two things together, and you have an absolutely lethal combination to labor. And it's time, in my opinion, for us to seriously look at repealing some of the provisions of Taft-Hartley. There were some that were good and necessary, but repealing many of the provisions of Taft-Hartley and just walking away from NAFTA and GATT so that we can go back to saying, okay, we have labor in the United States. We're going to protect labor in the United States. We each nation needs to be looking at its own labor, its own resources, and determining the kind of life that they want to have right there and then and all that sort of thing. So anyhow, just as an FYI, thanks for your call, Kevin. I appreciate that. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jim in Nashville. Hey, Jim, we're coming up close on the break here. If I have to cut you off, we'll hold you over the break.
Well, I'll be real quick.
Okay.
Over the weekend, four or five times, Republican shills were saying that Bush's speech is going to be upbeat and going to concentrate on the positive things that he's done for the nation, like war on terror, homeland security, and the Patriot Act. And they're going to frame this as a positive thing. And I believe the media is going to anoint John Kerry instead of Howard Dean.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it, Tom. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Yeah, I suspect you're right. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A lot of tiny plants in the ocean appear to be growing more slowly as the oceans get warmer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Plants use carbon dioxide during photosynthesis, but small plants at sea are not using as much carbon dioxide as they did 20 years ago. This change is worth noting because these plants remove huge amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and CO2 is one of the most common of all the greenhouse gases. Watson Gregg is an oceanographer with the U.S. space agency NASA. He uses satellite images to study the abundance of small marine plants known as phytoplankton. He says the phytoplankton have less to eat these days, and one reason has to do with water temperature. The temperature of the Earth's atmosphere has risen, and so has the temperature of seawater in the surface of the ocean. The surface water gets lighter as it gets warmer, and that seals off the deeper water that's cold and dense. The cold water carries up nutrients from the depths, and marine plants at the surface need it to survive. Gregg says this means less food for phytoplankton as the temperature of the surface goes up.
The more you warm it, the more of a barrier there is, and that prevents nutrients from getting up, and that tends to sort of starve the phytoplankton, so they can't grow as fast.
Gregg says satellite data indicate that phytoplankton use 6% less carbon dioxide today than they did in the early 1980s. He says the degree of the decline is not necessarily the most important part of the story.
I think the fact that there's a decline at all is probably the bigger thing. I don't know whether I can say that 6% is something particularly noteworthy. You know, it's not small, but the fact that it occurred at all suggests that there's a consistent story here.
Gregg says these results indicate that the use of carbon dioxide by marine plants might be declining as a result of changes in the Earth's climate. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
We'll be right back.
the best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Today, Martin Luther King Jr. Observance Day nationwide. Martin Luther King Jr. in December of 1964 said, and I quote, "World peace through nonviolent means is neither absurd nor unattainable. All other methods have failed," as we are seeing now in Iraq as well, by the way. "Thus, we must begin anew. Nonviolence is a good starting point. Those of us who believe in this method can be voices of reason, sanity, and understanding amid the voices of violence, hatred, and emotion. We can very well set a mood of peace out of which a system of peace can be built," end quote. And John Lucas produced some marvelous little vignettes about Martin Luther King for this day. And Char Jones, one of our great board operators, did and engineers, and also a great voiceover person in her own right, as is John, did the voiceover on this. So hear this from John Lucas and Char Jones. Why don't you play that, John?
Celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., listen as we reflect on his words.
"I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today."
Thank you, Dr. King, for being the person you were and for what you stood for to make us the people we are today. Your words live on.
Well done. Very, yes, and well said. Well, the United States is taking a hit. And you know what's really quite remarkable to me is whenever I tune into right-wing talk radio, it seems like there's somebody talking about the hate America first crowd is the phrase that they like to use, referring to anybody who disagrees with this administration's policies. And yet the policies of this administration are causing direct harm to the United States, both domestically and internationally. To point that out, of course, is not to hate your nation, but to love it. So, you know, we see the lie for what it is. But let's look at the damage that is being done. This today's Washington Post, the newspaper outside the door of our hotel room here this morning, and it just... there's a remarkable article. Glenn Kessler, a Washington Post staff writer, did some really good research on this. And the headline is, "Arms Issue Seen as Hurting U.S. Credibility Abroad." And I just want to share a few little clips from this with you, because this is just remarkable. They talk about the Bush administration's inability to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq after public statements declaring an imminent threat posed by Iraqi President Saddam Hussein has begun to harm the credibility abroad of the United States and of American intelligence. See, the whole world is looking at us now going, okay, you guys, either George Bush lied or you got some real idiots running your intelligence apparatus. Which is it? This is the terrible conundrum that Kerry and Gephardt find themselves in, who supported the war, is they're saying, you know, well, yeah, I'm against the war. Well, why'd you vote for it? Well, they convinced me that there was a danger, but there wasn't a danger. Yeah, well, and then at that point, they either have to say, well, George Bush lied to me, which I don't think any of them have come out and said, or our intelligence was flawed, which none of them have said. Now, I am not one of those who thinks that our intelligence was bad. I think our intelligence was cherry-picked by this administration. I think we have one of the most competent intelligence machines in the world, in the NSA and the CIA and DIA. And they knew what was going on. They knew what was going on. And everything that was cherry-picked out of this was this administration going in and saying, okay, well, here, somebody says there might be. So let's just take out the might be, removing the qualifiers. So here we have the Defense Advisory Board. Remember the Defense Advisory Board? This is the Pentagon's Defense Advisory Board, a supporter of the war, Kenneth Edelman, good Republican. He says, and I quote, "The foreign policy blowback is pretty serious. We are harmed in our ability to interact with other nations around the world because of the failure of this administration." To be honest, it goes beyond failure, because of the lies of the Bush administration. And they're going to try and direct your attention away from those lies by pointing to the fact that they've got Saddam Hussein in jail. And not mentioning that over 500 of our young men and women have died to put Saddam Hussein in jail. Frankly, I don't think it's a price we should have had to pay. Not to mention the billions of dollars. I mean, we could have built hundreds of thousands of schools in America. We could have paid for the salaries of millions of teachers. We could have given free college educations to over 3 million people for 4 full years, just based on the money we have spent so far in Iraq. The price was too high. Particularly, and the biggest price is the price to American credibility. You know, it's absolute tragedy. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in Brookings, Oregon is on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
To talk about the Iowa caucus kind of today, even though I think Howard Dean has been doing a lot of screwing up lately, I do think he's being unfairly singled out for a particular thing, which I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I don't think he's been screwing up. I think all of the anti-Dean sentiment has been getting all the press, and none of the anti-Gebhardt, anti-Kerry, anti-Wesley Clark sentiment has been getting any press. That's the bottom line.
Well, I agree. There's been a lot of ganging up on him. Absolutely. But the one thing I want to talk about him being unfairly singled out for is this thing about his wife. You know, they've been talking about his wife lately, Howard Dean.
Mm-hmm.
You still there?
Yeah, I am.
And
yeah.
and they're talking about the fact, well, she hasn't been campaigning with him, you know, for the last couple of years, however long he's been running for president now. And to me, this is absolutely ridiculous. And I got to thinking about it yesterday. I mean, to me, the fact that the subject even gets brought up in the first place, it seems rather sexist.
Well, Joe, it's a remnant of the fact that many countries have separated the functions of head of state and head of government. In Italy, for example, you have a president and a prime minister, and the president is the head of state and attends state functions, you know, cuts ribbons, goes to coronations, goes to funerals. The prime minister is the head of government and deals with the parliament and signs bills into law and all that sort of thing. In England, the head of government is the prime minister. The head of state is the queen. So, you know, typically around the world, most countries have separated these two functions. And because the head of state function is so symbolic, it is, this is our face to the world. This is our royal family, as it were. And because, you know, for better or worse, we're coming out of a tradition of thousands of years of rule by warlord families. I think that in America, no matter how egalitarian we try to be or we talk about ourselves being, the reality is that because we've combined those two functions into one job, the president being both the head of state and the head of the government, that people want their head of state to be somebody who represents, you know, the royal family kind of thing. That's going to be America's royal family is the president, his wife, and their children, if they have children, or the president, her husband, and the children, as the case may be. It hasn't been yet, but yep. You know, wait 4 years. And so I think that there's some I think that without criticizing the candidates and without calling the American people stupid, this is something that you can just understand at a psychological level. It doesn't mean that it's right. It doesn't mean necessarily that it's even healthy. Frankly, I don't know. I'm not willing to say it's unhealthy. It's just human nature.
Well, I think it is wrong to be criticizing Howard Dean for this. I really feel strongly about it. I mean, if the woman,
I agree with you,
has a full-time job and she's committed to it, then and she is entitled to her private life, and these people ought to mind their own damn business. Quite frankly, I'm getting tired of these presidential candidates who go around toting around their wives all the time like a trophy on a mantle case.
Yeah. Joe, I don't disagree with you at all. I'm right there with you. My point is that the average American, for the average American, that is going to be something that they're going to look at. And I think the fact that Judy Dean showed up yesterday at a campaign stop means that the Dean campaign is getting it, and that she's going to have to make some decisions. But it, you know, I think having a woman who is working as a physician while she's the first lady would be a marvelous thing for this country. Having a working first lady. Eleanor Roosevelt was about, you know, the closest that we've had to that. Eleanor Roosevelt was very active. She just didn't draw a salary from any of the things that she did, but she was very much out there with all these different women's charities and other groups. And so, you know, and she was loudly criticized. Oh, boy, did they criticize her for that, and FDR. But, you know, but I do think that people want to know who Judy Dean is, and that there is some legitimacy to that question. Although, as I agree with you, this isn't what the state is going to live or die on. Joe, thanks for your call and thanks for your comment. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Here we have Richard Haass, president of the Council on Foreign Relations, has said, the same problem, the loss of credibility, of American credibility around the world, could occur if the United States presses for actions against alleged weapons programs in Iran and Syria. We are losing our ability to convince the world of threats because the world is saying, hey, lied to us once, we believed you. We're not going to believe you the second time. Here, a Republican, Haass says, the inability to find suspected weapons has made it more difficult on some future occasion if the United States argues the intelligence warrants something controversial like a preventative attack, end quote. This administration has gotten us into a real problem, a real mess by lying our way into a war. They have just created a disaster. For our foreign policy disaster, harmed the reputation of our intelligence community, and put a huge stain, an absolute blemish, far worse than anything Bill Clinton ever did, on the presidency itself and the vice presidency. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Ken in Louisiana is on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
I'm going to differ with you just a little bit. Something you just said.
Okay.
You said the major thing that we are, this is paraphrasing it, you said the major thing we have lost is respect worldwide. And while I agree we have lost it, I don't think that's the major thing, because respect can always be gotten back. You'll have to fight for it. I think the major thing we've lost is 500-plus lives. These are people that will never live again. They basically have been sacrificed on the ego of George Bush, in my opinion.
Not to mention 10 to 20,000 injured soldiers, somewhere between 1,000 and 4,000 who have lost arms, legs, eyes, ears, and or been disfigured.
And the Iraqis, of course, that somehow just never get mixed into the equation.
Yeah.
Because there have been lots of Iraqis have lost their lives, children and, you know, everything.
You know, George Bush was always pretty gleeful about executing people in Texas. He was quite proud of the fact that he had executed more people than any state had ever executed in history. And it just always struck me as odd/tragic that he was so enthusiastic about it. His laughing about Carla Faye Tucker. I really wonder if the guy has the ability to empathize, if he gets it, the kind of harm and pain that he has caused.
I've often wondered if he has an element of sadism to him, because he actually seems to enjoy death to a certain extent.
Yeah, I doubt it's that. I do suspect, though, that the stories of his blowing up animals with firecrackers when he was a kid, this is the kind of stuff that you see in people who have very specific personality disorders. But whether or not George Bush is, you know, a crackpot, or, you know, mentally deficient or defective or harmed or whatever. The bottom line is that you're right. We have lied. Bush lied. A sociopath is the word. Bush lied, and I just thanks Tricia in the chat room or Klebert, and people died. And Clinton lied, and nobody died. I mean, you know, it's amazing the indignation and outrage that swept the House and Senate over Clinton lying about whether or not he had sex. And where is the rage? Where is the outrage? Where is the indignation now about the vice president receiving millions of dollars? I mean, Dick Cheney is still getting checks from Halliburton. And Halliburton is profiting from this war. You look at, you know, why did we go over there? Anyhow, that's my rant. Ken, you have the last word.
Well, the thing, of course, then you bring it right back to where did they get all these weapons of mass destruction that they actually did destroy? And, gee, that's funny. That traces right back to the Bushes to a certain extent.
To Donald Rumsfeld.
Right.
as the chief merchant. Yeah,
you set us up for a fall, and then you go take the guy out. You know?
Yeah. Well said, Ken. Thank you very much for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. I believe that unanswered questions regarding the accuracy and reliability of U.S. intelligence have created a credibility gap. When was the last time you heard that phrase and left the nation in a precarious position? These are the words of Congressman Representative Jane Harman of California, the senior Democrat on the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. She says the intelligence community seems to be in a state of denial and the administration seems to have moved on. It's like nobody's noticing the kind of damage that has been done. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, to talk to the animals. And you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., listen as we reflect on his words.
Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Thank you, Dr. King, for being the person you were and for what you stood for to make us the people we are today. Your words live on.
Bringing you Uncommon Sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Got to go back. We got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. For the healing. Go on with the dreamer.
And welcome back. Revitalizing Democracy with Talk Radio. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. This remarkable article, front page article in the Washington Post today, it jumps to a full page article on the inside. And they've got this unconfirmed claims chart. And, you know, whenever you hear cons say, well, you know, we were just doing what Bill Clinton would have done. See, that's the new thing, is blame it on Bill Clinton. All of a sudden, George Bush has become a fan of Bill Clinton. You know, well, Bill Clinton wanted to go into Iraq. No, he didn't. Bill Clinton was all in favor of a regime change in Iraq. But there was no inclination on the part of the Clinton administration to do it by force. They realized the dangers involved in that. And the fact that it would be a violation of international law. You just don't attack countries that haven't attacked you first. We have not done that. This is the what boggles my mind is that people don't get that this is the first time since 1776, since before then, because in 1776 in the Declaration of Independence, we attached a bill of particulars. We listed the offenses of England against us and said these are the ways we have been attacked. And we are fighting back by separating ourselves from England. And this is the first time since then that we haven't even attempted to have a rationale. Yeah, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution came about as a result of a lie. But at least we all thought we had been attacked. We all thought that the USS Maine had been attacked that led to the Spanish-American Civil War. We allowed that pretext. This war, the pretext fell apart almost instantly. The lie has been exposed. And the damage to American credibility around the world is absolutely awesome. And they do this comparison. Pre-2002 intelligence estimates. Biological weapons? Not sure. Chemical weapons? Maybe. Nuclear weapons? Probably not. Then we look at the October 2002 intelligence assessment. Biological weapons?
Yes.
Chemical weapons?
Yes.
Nuclear weapons?
Yes.
UN finding?
Nope, nope, nope.
And White House statements? Yes, yes, yes. Evidence since March 2003? No, no, no. And it's going to be interesting to see how Bill Clinton, or how George Bush tries to wallpaper this one over. Well, we know in advance. He'll do it the way he's done everything else up to this point. Try to lie his way out of it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Speaking truth to America.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A suicide driver set off a truck bomb at the gates of the U.S.-led coalition headquarters Sunday, killing about 20 people and wounding 63 in the deadliest attack here since Saddam Hussein's capture last month. The bombing came on the eve of a meeting between U.S. Administrator L. Paul Bremer and U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan to discuss Iraqi's future, including whether Iraq is safe enough for the world body to return. The attack was the first vehicle bombing inside the U.S.-controlled Green Zone along the west bank of the Tigris River, which insurgents have targeted in the past with mortar and rocket fire. The force of the blast from a bomb containing 1,000 pounds of explosive rattled windows more than a mile away. An Idaho lab has released conclusive results showing 36 mortar shells recently unearthed in southern Iraq contained no chemical warfare agent, the Danish Army said Sunday. Initial examinations by Danish and British troops had indicated a blister agent was in the shells, which apparently date to the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s. But tests by the U.S. Department of Energy's National Engineering and Environmental Laboratory in Idaho came back negative, the Danish Army Operational Command said in a statement. The results confirmed earlier findings by a U.S.-led Iraq survey group that was dispatched to the site in southern Iraq after the shells were found. Northwest Airlines said Sunday that an executive and a company spokesman were not aware of the company's role in a secret government study when they denied that the airline gave away passenger information. Northwest acknowledged Saturday that it gave information to the federal government for an air security project after the September 11th terrorist attacks. The airline said it participated in the NASA program to help the government search for technology to improve aviation security. Northwest was the second airline to be identified as secretly passing travelers' records to the government. In September, JetBlue Airways said it turned over passenger records to a defense contractor. The company later apologized to its customers. More news after this.
Sting for VH1 Save the Music.
When children learn music, they learn to think in a different way. Studies have shown that it helps them to do better work in other subjects. So make sure your kids learn music. They'll learn much more than how to carry a tune.
School music programs are in trouble. Help VH1 save the music in our public schools. Please call toll-free 1-888-VH1-4MUSIC.
VH1 Save the Music, because music education equals brain power.
People in straight-laced Singapore were urged Monday to act like monkeys the Chinese zodiac sign for the coming lunar year for the sake of their country. Singaporeans could foster an economic recovery this year by behaving more like monkeys, Deputy Prime Minister Tony Tan said in a Lunar New Year message. Chinese communities around the world will herald the start of the year of the monkey on Thursday. Chinese believe the monkey is clever, flexible, innovative, and confident, but can also be selfish, jealous, and vain. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, Matthew.
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Murder is not anything I could ever commit, but there are a few individuals whose obituaries I could read without feeling terribly sad. I must admit, however, that one thing does induce murderous thoughts in my otherwise gentle head: car alarms. Like a demon screeching from the deepest reaches of hell, these satanic devices whoop, beep, razz, whine, and irritate in the most intrusive way, shattering the civility of entire neighborhoods and jangling even the calmest of souls. They seem programmed specifically to go off in the wee hours of morning, rudely awakening families for blocks around in an act of urban harassment. Car alarms are sold in the name of theft protection, but that's a joke. An independent survey of 73 million insurance claims for robbery of vehicles reveals that cars with alarms, quote, show no overall reduction in theft losses. Why? Two reasons. First, nearly all of the whoop-whooping is due to false alarms caused by a passing motorcycle, a thump by a cat, or simply because the damn thing decides on its own to interrupt our peace and tranquility. They go off so often that most of us always assume it's a false alarm. An insurance company found that fewer than 1% of people would call the cops because of a blaring car alarm. Second, it's rare to hear an alarm when the car is actually being stolen because real thieves can easily deactivate the devices in only seconds. As one expert puts it, car alarms work about as well as fuzzy dice at deterring theft. Far from stopping crime, they often cause it, as irate neighbors go out in their jammies to puncture tires, sledgehammer hoods, and even shoot the offending vehicles. Plus, all of this is unnecessary, since there are engine immobilizers that can prevent nearly all auto thievery. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help kill screeching car alarms, call Transportation Alternatives, 212-629-8080.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
hey, Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Well, there's a lot going on in the primaries here, and the Republicans are now. The Republicans are moving into Iowa. Now, this smacks to me of the Nixon get Muskie strategy. In other words, determine who you want your opponent to be by messing with the other people's primaries. I see it's just so clear that, well, here's the story. This from the Washington Post. President Bush's campaign flew a dozen well-known Republicans in Iowa yesterday to counter-program Democrats on caucus night.
You get that? Via television interviews, calls to scores of radio stations, and meetings with GOP activists. What are the kind of things they say? Well, for example, on ABC this week, you had Ed Gillespie, former Enron lobbyist and now head of the RNC, saying, you see Dean signs out there and people out there in the cold, but he said, but I also think that intensity veers into anger and causes him to say some reckless things. So he's like praising him, you know, damning him with faint praise. It's even worse than that. About John Edwards, former Enron lobbyist and now RNC head, Ed Gillespie says, he's a very smooth-talking trial lawyer and a handsome devil, I've got to say. See, this is the kind of thing that is happening now in Iowa. And, of course, the caucuses are tonight. The New Hampshire primary is coming up. All sorts of stuff going on in the political arena. Let's get the let's get some inside viewpoints on this. We have an interesting guest on. B.J. Rudell ran Bill Bradley's presidential campaign in southwestern New Hampshire back in the 2000 race. And he wrote a book called Only in New Hampshire, a detailed account of his experiences running Bradley's campaign in New Hampshire. B.J., welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Good to be here.
I'm glad you could make it. Before we get to New Hampshire, what are your thoughts about the Iowa caucuses?
Well, it's very unusual to see four candidates, you know, this close together this late where no one can really predict who can win. And with caucuses, primaries, it's all about expectations. It's all about how the media is going to interpret it, as well as how the voters get out there, the people who are trying to get these voters to go out for their candidate. So it's about turnout, and it's about how the media interprets it. And with four people neck and neck, it's really just going to be interesting to see, you know, how it's interpreted when it's over.
You know, the media always likes a horse race, and they always like surprises. And now that we have news divisions that are actually run by entertainment divisions, at first they were promoting the guy nobody had heard of, Howard Dean. Oh, right. Howard Dean, he's going to bring an upset. He's going to change everything. He's going to turn all. And then when Dean got this great big lead, it was like all of a sudden things changed. In fact, I just very quickly here. This from the Associated Press. Howard Dean received significantly more criticism on network newscasts than the other Democratic presidential contenders who were subjects of more favorable coverage.
Right.
According to a study released Thursday, more than three-quarters of the coverage of Dean's foes by the nightly news programs was favorable, while a majority of attention to Dean was negative, the Center for Media and Public Affairs found. They looked at 187 stories on ABC, CBS, and NBC. They found that 49%, 49% of the time, the coverage of Governor Dean was positive, whereas 78% of the time, the rest of the Democratic field got positive attention.
It's a great thing to bring up because there is a pendulum effect that goes on. You know,
we
support underdogs.
Yeah, that's my question to you, is to what extent do you think that the Dean meteor up to the top and now the Dean falling and these other guys coming up are the results of the media in the beginning trying to promote the underdog thing to get better ratings, and then once he wasn't the underdog anymore but was the front runner, trying to bring down the front runner to get better ratings?
I don't believe there's an absolute answer, but it would be very, very clear to say that, yes, the media does look at how people are doing and decide, well, you know, we really haven't hit this person very hard. Bill Bradley had a honeymoon effect back in 1999 that lasted right around his arrhythmic heart problem, where people started to realize, well, you know, maybe Bill Bradley hasn't acknowledged that he had this heart problem. What else is he not acknowledging? And it began a little snowball effect. And we all felt at the time, oh, Bill Bradley, you know, he's getting great press. This has to last. And what I've been telling a lot of people all year is that it won't last for Howard Dean. The question is how he reacts to it, how he responds to it. Does he stay on message, or does he try to get on the defensive and try to counter what people are saying? Bill Clinton in 92 did that very, very successfully, had a great war room team to battle any kind of opposition to anything he was saying or doing. The question for Dean is, can he do that? So far, we're seeing slight slippage, but, you know, a victory in Iowa can change all that overnight.
Do you think that Dennis Kucinich's failure to find traction, at least in the polls, is a consequence of the candidate and or his message, or of some faux pas that he made with the press, for example, criticizing Ted Koppel?
Well, a House member historically has not done very well in presidential campaigns. It's been, I think, over a century since a House member has won. And so you have to attribute that partly, I think, to the fact that he has a very small constituency. He's not very well known. Even Lieberman was ahead in national polls when this all started.
And Lieberman is a senator, not a congressman.
Exactly. No, I'm saying, but in terms of someone having national recognition, Kucinich really didn't have that. I think that for him, traction was impossible from the start in that sense. What Dean was able to do and what separates Dean from Kucinich, I think more has to do with the organization. Dean was able to speak with, in terms of how the voters viewed it, I think, much more conviction, much more passion, much more anger towards the president. And also, Dean didn't have to worry about running for re-election in the House. You know, Dean stepped down from governor and decided to just let it all fly. I think for Kucinich, it's a matter of really not being able to get that same kind of charisma, same kind of energy behind that same issue. And partly, it's also the media. You know, the media can choose who they follow. And once Dean started to get some traction, it was a roller coaster, you know, ride downward from there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 13 minutes past the hour. We're talking with B.J. Rudell, who wrote the book Only in New Hampshire, the story of his working on Bill Bradley's campaign back in the year 2000. B.J., we've got a caller. 1-800-TALK-YES, by the way, is our number if you'd like to get in on this conversation. 1-800-825-5937. David in San Francisco, California is on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I didn't catch your guest's name, but I was...
B.J.
Pardon?
B.J.
Oh, B.J., hey.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, I was interested in... I'm a Green, but as someone who is formerly a Democrat, my parents, all the way back to early part of the last century, lifelong Greens, so to speak, or excuse me, lifelong Democrats, you know, and having seen the idea of politics as a... To some people play it as a game, and some people play it as a very dead serious patriotic necessity of saving your own property, your government. Mm-hmm. The idea of being able to look at a primary 9, 10, 11 months before election day reminds you of playing cards, that mm-hmm. you don't want to show your cards until the last moment. You want to bargain, you want to hedge, you want to...
Sure. What's the point, David?
Well, the idea of people stating their lifelong support, you know, their pledge, their pledge.
You're talking about endorsements?
Beg pardon?
You're talking about the endorsements that the candidates have gotten?
Yeah, exactly. You know, as a Nader supporter, he's endorsed Kucinich. You know, I'm very I look at Kucinich. He's a great guy. He's got a lot of strength and character. The only thing that makes him not electable, as far as typical politicos go, is that he's not tall.
David, we're not that shallow.
Oh, but they are. If you look at the history of the electorate since...
Yeah, I know a lot of tall people get elected. But
Howard Dean is also somewhat diminutive. So
yeah, Howard Dean is shorter than I am. I'm 5'11". Is there a question in there, David, for our guest?
Well, I'm just...
You can summarize in one sentence?
To give some support to Democrats, they have 11 months, or at least until August, before they have to lay their cards down. And I would, you know, people should stay firm on what they believe in and make these candidates work. Make them show what they really believe in. You know, it's the idea of a chameleon sitting on a given color is one thing, but a chameleon sitting on paisley or a chameleon sitting on plaid is a whole different...
Got it, David. Thank you for the call. I appreciate
Thanks,
it. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. I think B.J., that David basically wanted to inform us rather than having a question for you. So I have a question. What's your prediction for Iowa?
I hate to make predictions outright, if only because a month ago no one could make a prediction that, you know, that would have been accurate necessarily. A year ago no one thought Howard Dean would do anything. I can only say that whoever wins Iowa, obviously, you know, will have a big jump. But I will also say that whatever happens, Wesley Clark and Lieberman will not really be affected. They're not competing there. John McCain didn't compete 4 years ago, and he ended up beating Bush by 19 points in New Hampshire. So
yeah, and he very well could have beaten George Bush, would in all probability would have beaten George Bush and would have been the Republican candidate for president if George Bush hadn't run those push polls in the South where they had people calling
South Carolina,
registered
right.
voters and saying, how would you react if you learned that that the candidate John McCain, it was scared right out of me, that John McCain had an illegitimate child with a black woman.
Right.
And,
right.
I mean, they called hundreds of thousands of people and asked them this question as if they were doing a survey, and all of a sudden John McCain's support evaporated. And, you know, expect to see this again. This is how the Republicans play for keeps.
You've just tapped into one of the frustrations that I went through and that everyone goes through when you work on a primary. There are some things you can't control. You know, I worked 15 hours a day, 7 days a week in southwestern New Hampshire. We ended up winning 53% there for Bradley. But it was not without a lot of angst with dealing with anyone can say anything. Anyone can write any email on behalf of a candidate. Anyone can show up and say something bad about your candidate. And there's really not a lot you can control. All you can control is the minds of the voters in terms of reaching them at a moment's time and say, look, this is why I think you should support X candidate. What's going on right now in the minds of these people in Iowa is that they've got, you know, precinct captains across the state who are, they're checking in with every day, all day. Are you still on board? How is everything going? You know, what do you need? And all you hope to do is keep your voters intact, keep your support intact. And the candidate who can do that best can win. And Gephardt has a lot of the labor support. But, you know, that's not all you need. You also need new voters. Jesse Ventura, a few years ago, did great with new voters and became governor. Howard Dean has tapped into new voters, and the polls reflect that.
Yeah, I think
really,
go ahead.
It's a combination of those two things. You know, can you keep your voters intact, and can you reach out to new ones?
Yeah, I think the you know, to the extent that any of the candidates might be listening, including Kucinich, that any of the candidates might be listening to this program, I'll offer a free bit of advice. The ads that they're running that I've seen are off target, because the big question that the voters of Iowa are struggling with right now is, can this guy beat George Bush? Not is he better than the other guy. They're willing to accept the foibles or failures of anybody's program if he can beat George Bush, and that's what they should be focusing all of their advertising on right now. We're talking with B.J. Rudell. B.J., hang on. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IU America Radio Network. It's 20 minutes after the hour.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Remember when we hung in the low places in 1979? We used to think that it mattered to the man with the money where we spend our time. Oh, well, a new illegal guy with a mohawk can't do a chain around her neck. Oh, but you never recognize her if you saw her. She does something that you never expect.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Today, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And after the next break, we're going to play another of our little sound pieces, hearkening back to those times. We're talking right now, however, with B.J. Rudell, the man who wrote Bill Bradley's, who ran Bill Bradley's presidential campaign in southwestern New Hampshire, wrote Only in New Hampshire, a detailed account of his experiences running Bradley's campaign. B.J., tell us about what's unique and important about the New Hampshire primary.
Sure. It really comes down to retail politics. It's unusual with its small size. There's only about 1.2 million people. And so what it's all about is really taking the time to reach every single voter. Commercials, you know, are effective, but not as effective as places like New York and California. You really want to have people in your living room or go into their living room, meet them on their turf, and talk about issues that they care about, because these are people who meet every candidate, not just once, but sometimes several times. Mm-hmm. And to them, they're not as overwhelmed by the idea of meeting a future president or hearing from someone. They really want to know how that person is going to affect their lives.
Yeah, it seems then that for the rest of us, that we really should take seriously the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary, because those two states, probably uniquely among all the states in the United States, the vast majority of the average voters of our party, or whichever party it may be, Republican Party, Democratic Party, Independents, Greens, Progressives, whatever, the people have had an opportunity to actually meet face-to-face, confront with difficult questions, listen to the response, really get a sense of the candidates, and make a decision based more on what the candidate, who the candidates are, than on their, what their advertising says, or so it would seem. Is that
absolutely?
Is that
absolutely. Some people say, well, New Hampshire isn't representative of the whole nation. Why did they get the first primary? And my response to that, you know, I'm not an ardent defender or ardent opposer of anything that's status quo, but my view is being up in New Hampshire, these people really care about it. It's ingrained in them. You know, this is something that every 4 years they participate in.
Oh, they're political junkies. I used to live in New Hampshire. I lived in New Hampshire for 5 years.
Okay.
And
you know.
78 to 83. Yeah, I know it well.
And I think just to build on something you said earlier, if I can say, earlier in your show, you said a nation without heroes is a nation that's dying. And the beauty of New Hampshire is that there are heroes out there. You know, there's eight Democratic candidates running, and if a New Hampshireite can pick someone who can be their hero, in my case it was Bill Bradley when I was up there, you know, you really spend your time getting to know that person and following that person and doing what you can to support that person. and it's so centralized in New Hampshire, you really start to feel the democratic process in action in a way that you don't.
Now, the flip side of that, though, BJ, is that we saw as soon as Dick Gephardt and John Kerry began running carpet bombing Iowa voters with negative ads about Dean, we saw Dean starting to slip.
Right.
Doesn't that give the lie to the idea that we can actually trust these people to make a good judgment based on having met somebody and not being influenced by campaign commercials?
That's the irony of campaigning, I guess, is that you can work very hard for someone you believe in, and you get so swept up in it that people end up doing things that are destructive toward others. It's a zero-sum game, politics. And
awesome.
So there are people out there who believe so much in their candidate, they feel they're actually bettering the democratic process by helping their candidate win by helping others lose. And that's unfortunately just how it is.
Well, the rationale they use is, if you think this is tough, wait till you see what the Republicans are going to throw
at. Well, that's a good point. It's the argument that, hey, we're making this candidate better.
Yeah, it's a legitimate argument, isn't it?
What's that?
It's a legitimate argument, isn't it?
It's legitimate in the sense that historically it's been valuable. Al Gore, arguably was better prepared to face Bush after Bradley was able to challenge him on some issues and move him a little bit, arguably, to the left.
Yeah. Well, good points. B.J. Rudell we're speaking with, Bill Bradley's presidential campaign manager in southwestern New Hampshire back in the year 2000. Hang on, B.J., we got a break to take here. Robert in Tennessee and Ray in Oregon on the line. We'll pick up your calls right after this. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A lot of tiny plants in the ocean appear to be growing more slowly as the oceans get warmer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Plants use carbon dioxide during photosynthesis, but small plants at sea are not using as much carbon dioxide as they did 20 years ago. This change is worth noting because these plants remove huge amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and CO2 is one of the most common of all the greenhouse gases. Watson Gregg is an oceanographer with the U.S. space agency NASA. He uses satellite images to study the abundance of small marine plants known as phytoplankton. He says the phytoplankton have less to eat these days, and one reason has to do with water temperature. The temperature of the Earth's atmosphere has risen, and so has the temperature of seawater in the surface of the ocean. The surface water gets lighter as it gets warmer, and that seals off the deeper water that's cold and dense. The cold water carries up nutrients from the depths, and marine plants at the surface need it to survive. Gregg says this means less food for phytoplankton as the temperature of the surface goes up.
The more you warm it, the more of a barrier there is, and that prevents nutrients from getting up, and that tends to sort of starve the phytoplankton, so they can't grow as fast.
Gregg says satellite data indicate that phytoplankton use 6% less carbon dioxide today than they did in the early 1980s. He says the degree of the decline is not necessarily the most important part of the story.
I think the fact that there's a decline at all is probably the bigger thing. I don't know whether I can say that 6% is something particularly noteworthy. You know, it's not small, but the fact that it occurred at all suggests that there's a consistent story here.
Gregg says these results indicate that the use of carbon dioxide by marine plants might be declining as a result of changes in the Earth's climate. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament?
How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's not far. I can't walk down the block to table talk. Close my eyes, make the pies all day. Plastic cap on my hair. I used to mind, now I don't care. I used to mind, now I don't care. So I'm great.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Observance Day. The day we remember this extraordinary man, one of the greatest of America, well, certainly one of the greatest Americans of the 20th century. 4 days before he was assassinated, he said, "It is no longer a choice, my friends, between violence and nonviolence. It is either nonviolence or non-existence." This is such a poignant quote when you consider the context of an administration that has now claimed the right to preemptively attack any nation it wants for any reason it wants. And the insanity of the Bush administration, and anyhow, back to Martin Luther King's words, and he said, "And the alternative to disarmament, the alternative to a greater suspension of nuclear tests, the alternative to strengthening the United Nations and thereby disarming the whole world, may well be a civilization plunged into the abyss of annihilation, and our earthly habitat would be transformed into an inferno that even the mind of Dante could not imagine." And 4 days later, he was assassinated. We have a little clip here produced by John Lucas and voice-overed by Shar Jones, two of the most talented people at the IE America Radio Network. And, John, you want to play that?
Celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., listen as we reflect on his words.
Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Thank you, Dr. King, for being the person you were and for what you stood for to make us the people we are today. Your words live on.
Amen. And may they live on forever. And may we, and, you know, our wish, our prayer, our visualization, whatever your preference is, I think should be that our leaders become enlightened with that kind of enlightenment. It worked so powerfully for Reverend Martin Luther King. It worked so powerfully for Mahatma Gandhi. It worked so powerfully 2,000 years ago. It can work again. Anyhow, I'm getting off topic. We have B.J. Rudell on, the man who ran Bill Bradley's presidential campaign in southwestern New Hampshire, the author of Only in New Hampshire, a detailed account of his experience running Bradley's campaign in that state. And, B.J., you were telling us about what's unique and important about the New Hampshire primary. Clark and Lieberman skipped Iowa and are only on in New Hampshire. Do you think that this was a good strategy?
I think it was an excellent strategy because Clark came in late. It's very hard to build any kind of organization in any state when you start that late, when a lot of people have already extended their endorsements and support. I don't mean just high-level endorsements, but also, you know, the power players, the Democrats, those who are involved regularly, you know, in elections. So yeah. Clark made a good move of just trying to focus on one state and try to do as well as he can and reduce expectations. in Iowa. As for Lieberman's case, you know, he's a New Englander, and I think he felt that his best shot was to try to focus on New England.
Yeah. So the in particular, the Warrior candidate is playing this like a war game. He's doing his strategy. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, you had been on the line for some time. I'm in a studio that I'm unfamiliar with here, and I didn't catch the fact that you'd called. I apologize. Feel free to call back. I wasn't dissing you or anything. It just, I just went by my radar screen. Robert in Tennessee is on the line. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman program with B.J. Rudell.
How are you doing that, Tom?
Great.
Glad you got to put it there. So I was want to ask B.J., what was his name? Was B.J.?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to ask a question. Is Case Howard Dean, when I in New Hampshire, when he comes toward the south, would he be able to deal with the way the minority people are to get them together to vote? Because he took a shot against, I think when he let Reverend Al Sharpton gave him a shot, he didn't respond real good back to it. I just wonder if he'd be able to handle the South.
Well, on the other hand, Robert, do you think that Carol Moseley Braun's endorsing Howard Dean made up for his inability to answer Al Sharpton?
Carol Moseley Braun don't seem to be an outstanding person to the people toward the South as like Reverend Al Sharpton is,
mm-hmm.
Because he speaks out a lot and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I know she endorsed, but I just wonder, could he rally, get the vote in the South that he's going to need, just as George W. Bush is trying to do right now.
There you
by
go.
Going and visiting Atlanta and going to New Orleans and making these speeches to the minority.
Yeah. B.J., what are your thoughts on that? Good
it's
question,
a great
Robert.
Point, Robert. It's hard to know now. I do have a friend who I spoke with a few days ago who's was in Tennessee, as a matter of fact, and was working with a lot of other Democratic Party leaders there. And said that most of them were for Clark right now, which he found very interesting. I still think that, you know, momentum is the great equalizer in presidential campaigning. And if Dean is able to win Iowa and New Hampshire, which he has a better shot at than anyone at this point, arguably, then he will have the momentum going into the South. And I think there will be some people who start to fold up their tents after New Hampshire and throw their support behind the front runner as a show of unity.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. I think this is one of those watershed moments. I have a feeling that the Democratic primaries might have looked like this in 1932 when it was Franklin Roosevelt, that the Democrats are coming together in a way where they're not, you know, I mean, 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, 16 years ago, the discussion was my economic plan versus yours. You know, which do you like better, Bill Bradley's plan for Medicare or Al Gore's or his plan for Social Security? And the candidates were running on the issues. The issue that I think occupies at least 50% and maybe 90% of the brain power, of the concentration, of the attention, of the concern of today's Democratic voters and independents and progressives who are aligning themselves with the Democrats is, can this guy evict George Bush from the White House?
Right. And that's where Howard Dean got so much traction in the beginning. He was the only one who could stake a claim to being anti-Bush in so many different issues, in so many ways, where Kerry and others had voted with Bush on issues like the war and on tax cuts. It really separated Dean from the pack. And allowed a lot of people to say, well, if I want someone who's really going to be different than our current president, and if I disagree with our current president, Dean's a logical solution to that.
Yeah, very good. 41 minutes after the hour here on the Tom Hartman radio program. We're broadcasting live from the belly of the beast from Washington, D.C., the Hart Senate office building. And we have online B.J. Rudell, who ran Bill Bradley's presidential campaign in southwestern New Hampshire. And Ray in Oregon is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. If you have a question or you'd like to weigh in on the conversation, 1-800-TALK-YES. Ray, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, BJ.
Good morning,
Ray. I caught an article on the New York Times website this morning, and there was something in there that really caught my eye. The article is titled, Carter Put It on the Map and Iowa Hasn't Budged Since. And they were discussing the matter of how are these votes at the caucuses going to get counted. And as we know, the media is going to be in a frenzy tonight, and they're going to want to have the votes counted ASAP. And here's the bit of text that caught my eye. Today, the party uses the caucuses as a vital fundraising tool, and the candidates pay tribute, as Senator John Edwards of North Carolina did by donating computer equipment worth thousands of dollars for use during this election cycle. Then we have a quote on that from former Senator Gary Hart of Colorado, and quote, "That's getting very close to, I don't know what the right word would be, not corruption, but something," end quote. And I'm wondering if either of you would care to comment on just how this caucus is going to get voted. Is there a potential for fraud? Was Joe Stalin right that it doesn't matter who votes, but rather who counts the votes? And should we do we have a matter of concern here?
Yeah, that quote is probably apocryphal, by the way. It's
okay,
but it's a good quote.
I'll be happy to respond.
Your thoughts, BJ?
Sure. I feel that in this kind of race, where no one is a clear front runner, no one is a clear child of the Democratic Party in that sense, there really isn't anyone who is getting a lot of favoritism from the party.
Mm-hmm.
We had 4 years ago a different situation. Al Gore was the sitting vice president. He had most of the members of the Democratic National Committee with him from the start. Most leaders in New Hampshire and Iowa were with him from the start. You know, Bradley was fighting an uphill battle. In this case, we have four, and when you add in Clark and Lieberman, six candidates who still have a shot. And mm-hmm. I think that the Democratic Party will make great pains to ensure that there's fairness in it, because it's going to be 5-on-1 if anyone feels that one person got an unfair advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good one. To what extent do you think that Dean – thanks for the call, Ray. I appreciate
Thank
that.
Thank you.
BJ, to what extent do you think that Howard Dean's basically having said that Terry McAuliffe's job is toast if Dean becomes the nominee has affected his support in the media by the Democratic establishment?
Right. It's a great question. I mean, I've been following Dean's campaign since, believe it or not, 4 years ago when there was talk of him challenging Gore, you know, and he decided not to. And, you know, he's been quietly laying groundwork here. And he's, you know, he started out as an outsider, and he's made the very unusual power play of becoming kind of an insider-outsider, where he appeals to the outsiders in a massive way, and yet has a lot of insider support, you know, including Al Gore and Tom Harkin. I think that anything he's said, you know, about McAuliffe or anything like that will long be forgotten, you know, if he wins the nomination. And I think that the support of a lot of bigwigs in the party have helped shield him from some of the things that could have affected him and did a few months ago, but which he battled through.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a very clear bias against Dean on the part of, for example, Carville and Begala on Crossfire for quite some time, because he was not the DLC candidate, he was not
right.
the Bill Clinton candidate, he was the outsider, and it concerned me, frankly. And I saw that same kind of bias against Kucinich, frankly, but for very different reasons. Dan in Chicago's on the line. Dan has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, Dan, hey, welcome to the Tom Hartman
Hi, Tom.
Program.
Thanks
We're on with B.J. Riddell.
Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for having such a great guest. I was a supporter of Bradley in 2000 myself, and I think he's a great man and would have made a great president.
Yeah, he's a good
I have
guy.
A question here. I'm in Iowa today. I'm here. I drove from Chicago to help out John Edwards because, you know, I'm excited by what's happening here. And I just have a question mainly for you, Tom, is I really just don't get your electability issue with Howard Dean. I mean, honestly, these guys have very similar positions. Would you rather have someone who's a lawyer who knows how to actually reach out and touch people and convince people to be the guy supporting you, or a doctor who's blunt, abrasive, and turns people off at every turn? And I think if you want the Democrats to win in this election, go with the guy who reaches ordinary people on a gut level, who knows how to move them, who isn't going to offend everyone at every turn, and bring the entire party together. And by the way, Dennis Kucinich's second choice in this election, he said it many times, is John Edwards, and we've got to deal with Kucinich. If Kucinich does not get 15% in an Iowa precinct, he's going to come over. His people are instructed to come over and support John Edwards. You know, if Edwards really stands closest to the Kucinich platform, then much more so than Dean. And I'd just like to hear your comments on that.
Well, Dan, I'm not sure what you thought you heard me say, but I, the point that I thought I had made earlier was that I think that at least the four front runners, Kerry, Gephardt, Edwards, and Dean, are all absolutely electable. And my suggestion to all of their campaigns, and I would like to think that Dennis Kucinich is electable, but I'm concerned that some of the positions that he's taken are just a little too far out of the mainstream where he positions himself that way. But in any case, and also he's a member of the House, which doesn't quite give him the stature of a senator or a governor. But in any case, although I respect him in his positions, and I know that his followers are, boy, are they loyal, because boy, do I hear from them every time I say anything that isn't perceived as being friendly toward him. But the point is that I think that they're all electable. And what I was saying is that in their advertising, they need to be stressing electability. And that is what Kerry and Edwards have been doing. And I suspect, from what I've been seeing in the media, it's what Dean and to some extent Gephardt have been failing to do in the last few weeks. Because I believe that this election is going to turn, this primary, this caucus and the New Hampshire primary, are going to turn not on who's got the best health care plan or who's got the best way of getting out of Iraq, but rather on who is the most capable of beating George Bush, period. And I think John Edwards is a great candidate, and I would vote for him in a heartbeat and support him entirely if he became the nominee. I am not endorsing any of the candidates, Dan. I know Howard Dean better than any of the rest of them because he was my governor for a decade. But I am not endorsing any of them. I see my job as being an honest broker here to the extent that I can. I mean, you know, with my biases and obvious, you know, but
for both Doug Wilder and for Mayor Daley in Chicago, and I just looked at the whole field. I liked Dean Early because I knew him from the time that Wilder worked with him in the DNC. But he simply just hasn't worn well with me, and I don't think he's going to wear well with the American voters.
And the bottom line is, if he can't win in Iowa and New Hampshire, then he's not going to beat George Bush, and he shouldn't be in the race. And it's really that simple. It's a winnowing process here, and time will tell. Dan, thanks for the call. Good thoughts, and I'm glad you're there in Iowa. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Ron in Northern California, hang on. We'll pick up your call right after this break. We're talking with B.J. Rudell, author of Only in New Hampshire. We'll be back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Listen as we reflect on his words.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream.
Yes.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream.
Yes.
I have a dream that one day,
yes,
this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. King, for being the person you were and for what you stood for to make us the people we are today. Your words live on.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show,
where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, two for when you.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tight to that dream of a new America, a new administration, a new president and vice president, new cabinet officers. It can all happen in November of 2004, my friends. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. I want to thank, first of all, John Lucas for running the board, engineering our program so ably in Detroit. I want to thank the folks here in Washington, D.C., who helped put this thing together. Raul and Chris and James. I'm sorry, I don't have your card and your last name's right in front of me. And the folks in our chat room who dropped by today, and special thanks to Louise for producing our show. Now, that said, we still have B.J. Rudell on the line, and we've got Ron in California, Northern California, in our last 2 minutes or so. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program. Time for one quick question.
Hello.
Ron?
Hello.
Hey, Ron.
Yes, I'd like to say hello, of course, to BJ and yourself. Great show.
Thank you.
You know, Kevin Phillips, author of American Dynasty, Wealth and Democracy, great reads, by the way.
Yes.
He's recently posited that it may be in the Dems' best interest to run out the current competitive races as long as possible so as not to release the Republican attack dogs with their huge war money chest, so that they cannot concentrate just on one candidate. I think this actually makes strategic sense, albeit obviously not planned, But I think we're going to need all the help we can for regime change. And it does make a lot of sense. And this is, of course,
that's fascinating.
Yeah. So I would like you both to maybe ruminate about that and tell the listeners what you think. And again, your book, by the way, An Equal Protection, Tom, is an absolute must-read. So kudos
to you.
Kudos to you and your great show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Ron. I appreciate that. BJ, who do you think is going to win New Hampshire?
Dean is up by about 8 points right now, and a lot of it's going to depend on whether he wins Iowa. If he doesn't win Iowa, I think we'll see Clark and Kerry move up slightly and possibly overtake him.
So we might have a long-term horse race here. I think Ron made a really good point. I hadn't considered that. We'll see. We live in interesting times. BJ, thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks to our listeners. Thanks for joining us during these 3 hours. Tomorrow and the next day, Rama Schneider will be filling in for me ably from our studio, our Athenwood studio in Vermont. And I'll be back on Thursday. But join us again tomorrow, same time, same place, for another 3 hours of extraordinary, what do they call it? Uncommon sense from the radical middle. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
On Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her boogieing?
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.